One of the most transformative experiences I have had as part of my spiritual journey occurred during the summer of 2011 when I was 56 years old. I was about 2 weeks into a month-long self-directed silent meditation retreat at a place called the Forest Refuge, a retreat center nestled in the beautiful forest of central Massachusetts. There's a spider on my microphone. It's okay. It's a friendly spider, I think. But before telling this story, a little historical background is in order. It was 40 plus years prior to that, when I was in the seventh grade, that I first began feeling uncomfortable in my assigned gender and began imagining and seeing myself as a girl. At this time in the late 1960s, the word transgender had not been invented. There was no internet or other resources available for information, no role models, no mentors, no allies, and no cultural support, certainly, for these feelings. With no support available from anyone to help me understand, I felt too ashamed and afraid to talk to parents or teachers or anyone. And with no support or context for my feelings, I concluded there must be something terribly wrong with me. The seeds of my own internalized transphobia were planted in my young heart and mind at this very young age. It was also about this time that I began to reconsider the validity of the fundamentalist Christian religion I had been force-fed during my childhood. While I was dealing with my feelings of shame and guilt and fear associated with my thoughts about my gender, I was also being traumatized weekly and with even more shame and fear and guilt by the fire and brimstone preachers at the Baptist church my parents sent me to. By the ninth grade, I had pretty well rejected the theology and what I had experienced personally as the hatefulness of that faith. I began an extended search for a kinder, more sensible spiritual practice. By that time, I had already experienced several mystical experiences, which while they did not feel at all troubling, I also did not understand, and which I did not feel comfortable in sharing. My research for a new faith quickly led beyond all three of the Abrahamic religions and eventually landed in the South Asian traditions, including yoga and Buddhism. There I found an established basis for my mystical inclination, as well as fulfillment of my need for a kind and loving religion. In the years after high school, I moved away from my family home into a place with a major university. I found there resources to learn how to practice Zen Buddhist meditation and Hatha yoga. I incorporated these practices into my life as a single person and as a fledgling adult. Unfortunately, however, I did not find any basis for my inner discomfort with living as a male and wishing I could be a girl. So in order to live with myself in the world I found myself, I repressed and buried these thoughts and went on with my life. As best I could, I lived as a man and did what a man was expected to do. I married a woman, fathered a child, I worked and supported a family and household. During the period of growing into adulthood and into my role as a parent and the primary source of income and support for my household, the practices of yoga and meditation, which had been an important part of my life as a youth, slowly slipped by the wayside. These practices became sporadic for the next 20 years. Time passed, and by my mid-30s, my strategy of repression was no longer working, and my gender identity conflict resurfaced. I began a long period of cross-dressing. I lived through several cycles of secretly cross-dressing, feeling ashamed and fearful that my life would be ruined if anyone ever discovered my secret. At various points, I would throw away all my women's clothes and swear that I was done with it, I'd never do it again, that it wasn't worth the risk. But then a few months later, I found myself buying more clothes again and wearing them in private. All this time, I found myself wondering, why did wearing women's clothes make me feel more comfortable, more authentic? This cycle repeated several times over the year, which is very common, by the way, for transsexuals. And I continued to live with my shame and the fear of my secret being discovered. Only after the internet came into usage in my home in my mid-40s, was I able to access the information I needed to begin to understand what I had been going through for many years. I learned that I was not alone with my feelings and that there were other people like me. I learned that there were terms to describe who I was and what I was feeling. It was both a great relief as well as a somewhat frightening revelation. During this period of research, I kept running across the term transsexual. I did not like the sound of that word. I did not want to be a transsexual. I wanted to be something more manageable, more acceptable. I wanted to be something that would mesh with my current life, something not disruptive. Eventually, though, I came to reluctantly accept that that term accurately described how I felt and how I saw myself. But the knowing and understanding did nothing to relieve the shame and the fear I felt about what might happen should anyone discover my dark secret. It took a major health crisis in the year 2000 at age 45, during which I nearly died, to shake me from this paralysis. This crisis revealed itself to be a hidden blessing as I softened in many ways and gained a little clearer perspective of my life's trajectory. When I looked at my life from the place of impending death, I did not like some of the things I saw, and I began making some different choices. I began taking better care of myself, for one. I allowed my long-established electrical contracting business to die a natural death over the next couple of years. Meanwhile, in a committed way, I took up two old familiar practices, yoga and meditation. These had lain dormant for many years. I spent a month living at an ashram, taking yoga teacher training, and I began attending Buddhist meditation retreats. I spent a few years teaching yoga at various places in my community while I transitioned away from my electrical contracting business and my old life. It was during this transition time that I ran across the poem, The Journey by Mary Oliver. It became a guide for what was a mostly subconscious, but nonetheless intentional movement toward building a new, more authentic life for myself. I had it on my bedroom wall, so every day I would go by it, and somehow it was a guidepost for me. This was a transition process that I engaged in when in 2011, I arrived at the Forest Refuge. After 2 weeks of continuous practice, I was in a very quiet state of mind. Meditating in my room before sunrise, I was practicing samatha, peaceful abiding meditation, allowing the sounds of the waning nighttime and of the pending dawn to pass into and out of my awareness. I was unexpectedly overcome by a great sense of ease and release. I felt suddenly a complete peace, at peace with myself and with my life overall. A lifetime of angst dropped away in that moment, and I found myself resting in a place of complete silence and stillness. I was given and I accepted permission and the capacity to love myself fully and completely, just exactly as I was, in my body, in my life, and in the world, in that moment and in every moment. An overwhelming sense of self-compassion arose in me, and I knew then that I no longer needed to feel afraid or ashamed or guilty about my identity as a transgender woman, that I was perfect in every way. And without my willing it, the decision was made that I would no longer deny or reject or in any other way fight against who I knew myself to be. The decision was made for me that I could and that I would allow my gender identity to manifest itself in my life. I had no agenda whatsoever at this point, but with no particular agenda, that was the conscious beginning of a long and sometimes difficult journey of allowing myself to become truly authentic. This was a powerful and joyful moment in my life. Though the perfect clarity of my insight experience began to fade over time, as insights tend to do, still I was left with a clear sense of direction, of empowerment, and of dedication to the path before me. It was a very liberating moment, and I was, at least for a time, released from my years of angst and suffering. But what were the causes and conditions which brought about this mystical experience, this altered state of heart and mind, of pure, uncompromised compassion for myself? How had I come to land yet again in that place of deeply still silence? Through my Buddhist practices and studies, I've come to know that nothing in this world or in experience arises out of nothing. Yes, this had been a moment of grace, but even grace has its causes and conditions. It's clear to me that my experience of being a transgender woman provided grist for the mill. In other words, the spiritual motivation, the fuel for my awakening event that early morning. Without my transgender history, the need for such a significant shift into self-compassion might not have been necessary. What had for so long felt like a problem, in the end turned out to be a sort of a blessing in disguise. The problem had a solution, and the solution was unconditional self-compassion. In this way, being transgender has been an important factor affecting my spiritual journey. So we all struggle with what we see as problems with who we are in our lives. What's your particular struggle about? How might unconditional self-compassion change this for you? And how might you arrive at this place of acceptance? Much of my history of struggle with societal, as well as my own internal prejudice, led up to this moment of grace for me in 2011. But why was I able to have this particular response to the circumstances of my life as a transgender person? So many transgender people are instead beaten down by the ongoing societal transphobia and by our own internalized transphobia. Many transgender people, including myself, struggle with depression and anxiety. A disproportionate number of us succumb to suicide as a response to what can look like an irreconcilable situation, the condition of finding nowhere in society to fit as we are. Despite my depression and anxiety, why was my breakthrough moment one of empowerment rather than of defeat? How did my heart find its source and its way to freedom and release rather than sinking into despair? I credit being dedicated to a long-term spiritual practice for my experience that morning. There's a great variety of spiritual practices which might bring about a result similar to mine, but for me, a Buddhist practice was the best fit. This moment didn't just happen out of nowhere. For 11 years prior, I had faithfully engaged with a number of specific trainings and practices. I practiced formal sitting meditation twice each day, day after day, year after year. This served to help me develop one-pointed focused attention, to learn to let go of distraction, and to quiet the mind. I also practiced continuing mindfulness as a way to expand my focus concentration to include an awareness of ever-changing experience in the day-to-day world. I practice what is called the Brahma Viharas, or divine abodes, a specific kind of meditation designed to increase compassion, unconditional loving kindness, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. I attended weeks and months of silent meditation retreats where I spent 8 to 12 hours each day in uninterrupted sitting and walking meditation. I took on and aligned my life with a specific set of ethical guidelines for training on the path, guidelines which support living a life without regret or fear as a way to help support the development of concentration and peace. I read and studied many books on the subject of Buddhist practices and history. I had exposure to many teachers, both Western and Asian, and took in their words and their experiences. This comprehensive lifestyle and set of Buddhist-based practices are known as the Buddha Dhamma. They became and continue to be the primary guidepost of my life. For most of those years of practice, it did not seem that I was making much progress. If anything, as I became more familiar with the workings of my own mind, it felt like there was even more clutter and unsettledness than I'd known before. Self-knowledge is often bad news. And combined with my struggles with my gender identity and my marriage, I did not particularly feel any happier or peaceful most of the time either. I did not develop as much compassion, loving kindness, joy, and equanimity as I was hoping for and expecting. But still, I remained dedicated to this path. Somehow I had faith that it would support me and lead ultimately to peace and satisfaction. I've come to understand that during all of those years of diligent practice, I was planting and nurturing the seeds which were to come to fruition later on. In that moment in my room in July 2011 in Massachusetts, those years of dedicated practice and determination matured and bore fruit in my life. Dear friends, it is easy to feel discouraged. Many of us find ourselves engaged with work and with making efforts that we feel are the right thing to do. At the same time, we may doubt that our efforts are having any significant effect. No matter which path you choose, I encourage each of you to be persistent and even dedicated to it. Make it your intention to plant seeds of kindness and non-harming, and these seeds have the potential to mature and to bear fruit, fruit that serves to reduce suffering in the world, both the suffering of ourselves as well as our own. Thank you.